What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Non-Refungible Podcast. I am Nate Digital. Today we got Yaba Deluxe, Crypto Crier, and FUD Behind the Glass. And today, before we get into our guests here today, we have a couple of housekeeping notes, some announcements. We actually released a name tag Noken, which there was only 420 released. So all you have to do is just follow NRN and go claim your token. It's 100% free. We will be able to do some cool stuff down the road with that. So go check that out. Also,
Nate, you didn't even do the sound drop for that.
Which one?
The horns, man. We got 420 Nokens out, name tag tokens, right?
Actually, with 297 holders.
That's crazy.
Clean it up.
That's crazy.
Hey, I didn't want to say it, but the Noken is giving me early BAYC vibes. I don't want to say it.
You heard it here first. Alpha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get your name tag token. NRN Noken.
You know what? It's actually perfect that, you know, the artwork that we use for the name tag Noken, shout out to Ryan, it was actually created in Midjourney AI. So it's perfect. Perfect for our guest tonight. So yeah, let's just get into it. Today we have AI Arena, we have Way and Autonomous, also known as Michael. What's up, guys? How we doing?
Doing well, guys. Great to have us here. Really excited to get into it.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah, sorry for that extended intro, but we're excited to talk. But yeah, man, we dropped a little name tag token today and the art was completely with AI. So, people were liking it. So, I guess this is the new world we're in.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So, let's just get right into this AI thing. So we got a game coming out. It's called AI Arena. I have to ask you this right off the bat. Are you guys actually coders or did AI create this game? Did you guys type some coding prompts into ChatGPT? What happened?
So I'll speak on behalf of myself. I'm not a coder. I'm purely on the business side. Autonomous or Michael definitely has more coding chops than I do. But we have an incredible engineering team that built everything, every single line of code from scratch. And we actually built our own game engine to really power this game. So this is not like something that you can just kind of build on top of like a Unity or Unreal. We had to basically start from first principles, design a game engine first before we were able to build this actual experience called AI Arena. And it is not developed or prompted by something like ChatGPT or any of the generative type AI models out there. And I think that's actually one of the key differentiators about us relative to what is really kind of hot and trending right now in the AI space, which is really, you know, centered around generative AI, large language models. And that's not what we're doing at all. We are fundamentally reimagining what it would be like to have AI integrated into a game experience where you're experiencing AI in a very immersive way, but it still quintessentially preserves the human element in all of it, right? So that combination is where the magic happens. And yeah, happy to kind of, you know, dig into it and peel back at the onion and discuss it at more detail throughout the show.
I like that draw of the human connection for sure. It's something that's very important. You know, we see the battle between people on Twitter's who's created this. It's just a random computer creating this image. It has no value. It has no artistic eye or anything like that. So when we don't actually get to experience it, I think it's definitely something that people, I don't know, shy away from or don't really enjoy, you know.
I am MFers.
Exactly.
I love how you guys didn't even start building a game. You had to build the engine first. Like, So yeah, this is the opposite of
game engine. What is the game engine?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying. I'll be the one that's stupid. Like, what is a game engine? Like, I've heard of Unity. Like, what? Tell me what a game engine is actually.
Yeah, I think it's an underlying set of like building infrastructure that allows you to create different types of game experiences on. Mm-hmm. So it's more of like an infrastructure level piece of technology. For us, what it allows us to create is different types of games that use a similar type of, call it, approach to create these game experiences, where the core underlying experience that we're creating is humans are now able to basically transfer their skills into an AI. Mm-hmm. But it's your specific and distinctive skill, yeah. Right? The mm-hmm. AI becomes quintessentially you.
Mm.
And this infrastructure layer that we built powers this type of experiences. So AI Arena is the game itself that we're applying it to is like a platform fighting game. So visually, you can imagine something that's akin to Super Smash Bros. But what's happening now is we're allowing human players to train these AI models and transfer their skills into an AI. And then the AI competes and fights other AIs on your behalf as the human. Okay. Now, this type of, call it approach to game experience doesn't have to be just in a game where it's like a platform fighting game. It could be other types of game. It could be a driving game, right? You teach an AI how to drive better in like Formula One or NASCAR. You can teach an AI to play basketball or soccer or football in a particular way. You can apply this kind of primitive of gaming to many different types of games. And this is what we mean by building the game engine. And honestly, like Brandon, the co-founder, will probably kill me for using the word game engine because he doesn't like to refer to it as that. He more likes to refer it to as a game infrastructure. But this infrastructure allows us to create this type of experience across a multitude of different games over time. The starting point, the first thing that we applied it to, is a platform fighting game.
Mm-hmm. So that game is, you said is it not PvP? It's PvE, I guess, or computer?
No, it's PvP. It is PvP.
PvCP.
So, yeah. It's like there's
an extra V in there.
There's something in between the P's. So basically the process is for example, I have an AI, Michael, Autonomous have an AI, Nate has an AI, you have an AI. We train our own AIs. And what we're doing is we're teaching our AIs to play like us, right? Or we're teaching them how to play in a way that's effective. Once we're happy or confident with our AIs, we allow our AIs to battle each other in the arena. Mm-hmm. That's when it becomes PvP. Now, the player in that case is actually the AI, because the real human player is now peeled away from the actual battle experience. We're only there to train the AI. Once they battle, they're auto-battling each other.
Mm. So it's like coach mode in Madden.
Yes.
Yeah.
If that's still a thing, right? I don't know if it can't be.
No,
a thing
it's not
anymore.
Even. It's not even coach mode. It's you practicing on practice and then putting your player in a simulation.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I think the coach mode is a good analogy. Except is a very immersive coach mode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not coach mode where you're standing there and like you're pressing a couple of buttons and your players are just like doing all of these plays, right? This is very like individual training, where it's almost more akin to an experience where you're teaching a young child how to play soccer for the first time, one-on-one, right? So what would you do in that situation? You probably start by saying, here's a ball. Let me take you through what the core objective of this game is to kick the ball so that the ball goes into the net.
Mm.
Okay, now that you understand it, let's go through the very fundamentals. What are the fundamentals? Dribbling the ball. Right? Passing the ball, right? Striking it the right way. And then what you would do is you probably would demonstrate each of those actions a few times. And the child is watching you as you're doing it. And then after that, what you would do is, okay, now it's like, I've done it, now you try. And then as you're trying it, you're coaching them. You're like, okay, tweak this about how you're hitting the ball. You don't want to hit the ball this way. You want to hit the ball this way, like, because no, it gives it
the ball in the net.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Things nothing like that. So,
dude, yeah.
So this is the core game experience. It's very immersive. It's like step by step. There's multiple different stages to it. And what the outcome of all of it is that slowly but methodically, you can start to stack all of these layers of skills and transfer that into your AI, such that your AI becomes a very well-rounded, very like highly skilled player in this particular domain that you're trying to teach.
And it's unique too, right? It's unique to you and all your effort that you put in.
Absolutely.
It's unique to you, Yaba. So don't get mad when my AI character beats up your AI character.
That's exactly
it's
it.
Just playing off Yaba.
So coming from a position of, you know, a world-renowned Super Smash player teaching somebody, he's going to make an AI that's like insanely good, or somebody that is just good at educating and explaining things, which one's going to be better here?
Like, what's that pro gamer that bought the sewer pass key? Can I just, go hire him to train my character?
Mongrel.
Can I delegate?
Mongrel.
Yeah.
Mongrel, if you're watching this, we want you in the arena. We'll
see how he is. He's listening.
I'm calling you
Call
out.
Call him out, bro.
I'm calling you out, man.
Right here on NRN. You heard it first.
I don't know. I'm just saying. But to answer your question directly, if I were a betting man, I would say the pro gamer probably has an advantage. Now, it's not an outright definitive statement. And the reason I say that is because we're in the realm of AI, actually people with good intuition of the strategy embedded in a game can really create pretty tremendous AIs.
Yeah.
Because in traditional gaming, if you are the person who has to perform, you still need to have, not only do you need to understand the
incredible reflexes,
the gameplay, you have like reaction times, all of those things factor into it.
You're not 13 anymore, so I'm 30.
For for AIs is different. So long as you can teach it these things, the reflexes and all of that is actually handled by the AI. And that's what's actually really exciting, because we do have, like, we have really good players who point blank told us, if I were to play Smash on my own, I would get my ass kicked.
Yeah.
But I understand how to play Smash, the concept, the strategies.
Block here and follow up with
exactly.
This. You know, these are the things.
And I can get a lot out of my AI. And in fact, like this particular player, UK, he made this comment in our community, and he's consistently top five in all of our competitions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, having said that,
we did
have a ex-pro player come into our last tournament, and he just dusted everyone. Like, it wasn't even like, this guy was like number one from day one until the end, and we were looking at his like Elo chart.
Get him out.
It was you know, some normal people, like, there's variation, peaks and valleys. This guy was just like a linear line upwards and to the right. So
he's botting you, bro. He's got bots.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, like, pro gamers do have really good game intuition, right?
Sure.
They have that mastered as well.
There's a reason why they're always at the top.
Exactly. So I would say, yeah, if you got a real pro in there, I'm pretty sure they'll be pretty good.
They annihilate you.
But yeah.
I like that.
Actually, this is a good point. So, like, let's say I did get Mongrel to help me out, because, you know, we are buddies. So he trains my AI for a week, but, you know, he has to go back to his video game life. Now it's just in my hands. Is my AI character going to get dumber and weaker?
It doesn't get dumber in absolute terms.
Just like me.
So it does not get dumber. However, relatively,
it gets weaker.
It gets weaker because everyone else is progressing.
Yeah.
So,
right.
And that's the other like beautiful aspect of this game, is that it really does start, like, the game theory and the competitive aspect really does start mimicking real life. Because in traditional games, what you have is game models. The models that power characters are effectively like complex if statements.
Yeah.
if this, then that, if this, then that, if this, then that. And it can get really complex and they can be very expressive, but they're bounded. They're constrained by these if statements. So what you end up having is you can't break through the natural barriers that the characters are endowed with, right? Like you can only customize it to a degree.
Yeah,
and then you can't do it anymore. Not in this game. This game is like, it's a full probability distribution. So you can get it very, very, very precise in terms of how you want it to behave. Mm-hmm. And then that also means there's no theoretic ceiling. There's no theoretical ceiling here. Your AIs can be as good or as advanced or as customized to deal with a particular type of opponent. Or in the opposite extreme, let's say you want to teach your AI to be just terrible at the game. You can do it. It's a very flexible learning model. It doesn't, there's no constraints from that perspective.
And is training this AI, is it going to be simply just putting it in battle against a computer, just testing reflexes?
You got to write.
No, so.
I got to write the code?
Well, you got to write the prompt, right?
There's no code in this.
No prompts? No, there's no prompts.
Okay. There is no prompts in the traditional way of people how they think about ChatGPT or Midjourney. It's not like you put in a text and it does something.
There is this metaphorical
prompt of you are showing the AI what to do through controlling it.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, so the first step of playing the game, it actually feels like you're just playing Super Smash or something akin to that. But what you're doing is you have to be deliberate because remember, you're teaching something how to do something. You're not doing it yourself. So the way that you go about doing that, you probably have to be a bit more precise, calculated, specific,
slower,
and then thinking about progression and how you kind of bring all of that together.
Like, oh, I executed that combo. And it's like, well, how the hell did you do that? You know?
Yeah, and Michael can kind of take you through the whole loop.
Yeah, no, and I just want to say you can get pretty granular. So it's not just vague prompts like how to punch or do a combo. Like on the defense side too, we had one of the dominant strategies really early on was somebody just sitting in the middle and doing sweeping kicks, right? And against weak AIs, you know, that was pretty effective. It would knock them off. Well, guess what? You can go into training, have the opposing player just do sweeping kicks in the middle, and then you go record. So start watching what I'm doing, AI, and maybe devise a strategy for how to beat that. So whenever it's doing sweeping kicks in the middle, go from over top and spear punch, something like that. That's really how, and then your AI learns to do that. So when it sees a sweeping kick in the middle, it knows it knows what you taught it. Now abstract that to really any scenario in a fight that you could think of, right? And like Wei said, it starts with the basics where, you know, maybe you teach it how to do a flying kick or, you know, when to shield. And then, you know, like you said, yeah, but at the beginning, it's infinite, right? So The better players are going to get even more granular, right? So just to show you the depth that it can get to. Yeah,
man, that's dope. The only question I have is, all right, so I'm not a gamer. I don't know if who could tell that right now. But, you know, I'm not a big gamer, but I used to be in the past, play a bunch of games. And one of the things
Game, Yava? Centipede? Tetris?
I play Snake. I play Frogger on my TI-83.
I'm the same age as Yava. Yeah, Frogger, call it out.
And my Nokia brick phone. Okay, but at the same time, so, I mean, I take it back to, like, Mortal Kombat to age myself. All this... All right, I draw the analogy of me being in the game playing like an actual exhibition against another player. I'm able to do stuff on the fly that maybe if I was training, like I wouldn't be able to do. And you know, I wouldn't have that ability. I would just have to be on the sidelines watching. And then for me in the game, is that's a part of it. It's that whole synaptic connection. It's like writing on a piece of paper versus typing on a computer screen, you know, or reading a book instead of reading a tablet. I feel like I'm a little bit more removed from that. Even though I spent all this time training, that's fun. But the bigger thing is it's more fun for me real time to say battle FUD and talk all of the shit I can to FUD when I'm beating them in whatever combat system I play. So, I mean, how do you bridge that gap? I mean, I'm just looking at this from that angle.
I think first of all, factually, you're correct. You are removed in that situation, so you don't have control. Now, the rest of it, I would say, you need to try it and experience it for yourself.
Oh yeah, I'm missing something here.
Because I would say that first of all, like whatever is fun is kind of subjective to the individual.
Yeah,
however, right. I would say in this case, maybe for some people they're like, okay, I'm not controlling, therefore it's not as fun and engaging. If you experience the game, and we have like hundreds and hundreds of people that have tried it already, it is one of the most exciting experiences. By virtue of the fact that you don't have control in that situation.
And I can see that too.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
it's
a horse race.
It's really, yeah, it's nerve wracking. It, like, you are, we say, like, you're on the edge of your seat, and you really are on the edge of your seat. And can you imagine you spent so much time painstakingly tweaking this thing, and it's going up against a formidable competitor that's in your skill bracket. It's freaking close. You're down to the wire, and you just have to trust in the fact that your AI has got this based on the learnings that you have imparted on it. Its reaction time and the things that sometimes they do is actually more impressive than what humans can do in a lot of cases. I'm just going to put it out there. So it's actually really fun to watch, and the experience is really, really exciting. It is different. I will give you that. It's not the same as if you're in it and you're controlling everything and you feel that kind of, you said it, the words were synaptic type of, you know, connection to the action that's taking place. But it's a fundamentally different experience. It is no less exciting, though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and I give you that. One last note on this point.
Yep.
As a creative player, I like to be able to put in cheat codes. Like, I don't want to stay into that my own creative
Rosebud
bracket, man.
Game genius.
I like to put in. I mean, I don't know how cheat codes work anymore, but I know it, back in the day,
yeah, I was like, how can
you
I
can
cheat?
Put in cheat codes and you can boost your skill level up to 100%. How am I gonna be able to? I mean, I feel like I'm missing.
You gotta
that.
Sweep the floor.
I'm always gonna be in that skill bracket, man. If I can't get any better, if my reflexes won't get any better, what's going on there?
So you're right. This game is skill based. It's almost 100% skill based. So there's almost like no pay to win element in this game. And we wanted that because you have to preserve the integrity of this competition. And really what we want out of all of this is we cannot devalue the skill that it took for someone to get their AI to a superhuman level of performance. By giving them the opportunity to enter a few lines of code and making their superhuman. Because then it would lose all of its. It defeats the purpose. It loses all of its intrigue. And the fact that it's difficult, and I'll like be out front and blunt, like it's a simple game. It's very easy to understand the game mechanics. Easy
to
pick up. Incredibly difficult to master. And that's exactly how we design it. That's how we need it to be. And this is actually the core ingredients that makes it a competitive esports ready game. Because in that type of construct, you need a game with a few things. It needs to be competitive. It needs to be very high skill ceiling, right? Which is what we have. It's almost unlimited skill ceiling. And then you need the ability for people to really separate themselves from competition, right? You need that ability for someone to be like just truly better than everyone else. Because that adds to the drama. That adds to, you know, why people have already started developing these fan superstar experiences, right? Because they're like, man, I'm struggling. My guy's just doing spammy spin kicks. And this guy's AI is literally like doing things I can't even do as a human.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So
nice little undercut roundhouse kick.
Exactly.
Yeah, dude. All I can do is keep doing it.
Liu Kang, he used to just
fireball.
Yeah,
like back in Mortal Kombat. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, you just get down and just do a little roundhouse, you know? Trip them up.
I was going to say, I really like the how you do just discuss the synaptic connection and stuff like that. you know, I really, how you said it, and you know, it's not, it's a whole different experience, and I can picture that because, you know, I can see me playing with my son, teaching him how to ride a bike or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like I get immense, like, yeah, oh my God, like he just did it. Like that, fuck yeah. Like
right.
He finally got it. Exactly, like I can see point. Where
he's your little AI, dude.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He is my experience little AI.
We had people that were very connected to their AI in the beta, and they didn't want to, they're like, damn, it needs to reset.
I don't want to reset this shit.
Yeah. Because you it's almost like a reflection of you, right? It's a digital and if you think about tapping into like gamer psychology, if gamers, you know, love putting skins on their characters and customizing it as much as possible. Reflection. Imagine if this character is an actual reflection of you. And so there's different elements of fun. Fun isn't just like a binary, you know, there's many different ways. So that's one of them, being connected to it like it's your child. For me, you know, everyone's going to have different, for me, the discovery process of whether the AI is good, it's almost like that moment when you click generate in Midjourney and then you don't know what picture is going to come up. Once you've trained an AI and then you're like, okay, let me simulate it, right? You don't know if it's going to get its ass handed to it or if it's going to win. And you're on edge the whole battle because at any moment, it could be that knockout punch at any moment and you're just waiting, right? And also, you know, you can play against your guy. When I first had my AI, it was beating me at first. Then I started beating it. I'm like, damn, I'm getting better. You know, I better update my AI skills, right? Yeah. And so there's so many different ways. There's so many different. And then just imagine, like, if we had it 1v1, and we legitimately don't know what's going to happen, right? And it's almost, it's just a different experience, which leaves you on edge, like Wei said.
That's awesome. Yeah, it makes you really look in the mirror. You're fighting yourself. But Mike, so yeah, you know, you put your character into battle and then he starts losing. You have nobody to blame but yourself. You are the one who trained that character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Actually, we haven't even talked about, you know, this is a Web3 game, you know, right? So, I mean, I'm assuming there's an NFT and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming the NFT is your character. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's correct. So I would describe it as there is a Web3 component or Web3 version of the game. There's also the mass adoption version, you can call it, is actually, it doesn't even run on Web3. It doesn't need to. Mm-hmm. It's just more, it's like a onboarding vehicle for as many people to try out the game and play it as possible. Now, the Web3 version of the game is the professional league. Mm-hmm. That's where all the pros play. And then the NFT that they have is a playable character, right? So now what does that mean? The NFT is not only your playable character, it's embedded with an AI. So as you progress, your AI's memory and track record is all registered on chain, right? So we're leveraging a public blockchain, Ethereum, for you know, its immutable characteristics, the fact that we can now transfer value to a global network of professional players, right? Those are what Web3 creates and offers in terms of additive elements to this game. So it's actually quite elegant to run a professional competitive version for real money with high stakes on Web3.
Mm. For sure.
Wait, yeah.
It's like the perfect marriage.
We've seen it a lot with Avalanche. You know, they're getting really big into that with chess and other platforms. A lot of trading card games are doing exactly the same thing, like Parallel, similar approach too. So I like that a lot.
So I mean, it sounds like you've solved you're actually doing what, you know, everybody anticipated that gaming companies in Web3 would do, which is, you know, you have this character, you have this quote unquote skin, you enhance it, it adds value, and then you can transfer that value. Versus like the non-professional game or the mass adoption game is, you know, you're just building it, it's yours forever, you can't really do anything with it after
Fortnite,
that.
Fortnite, you could say it. You could say it.
Yeah, Fortnite. Fortnite.
Fortnite, yeah.
All my homies.
So I would say it's really like in our game is down to the experience that someone has. Now, not everyone who plays this game wants to be competitive. Mm-hmm. They don't want to compete at that level. there's only a small cross-section of people that really play games that way. So we need a version that's more accommodative to the mass audience who are more likely to not casual players.
Yeah.
Right? They can enjoy it, they can experience it, and maybe play and compete, shit talk with their friends, you know, get together. That's it. That's all they want. But the competitive version is high stakes. It's they're gonna treat it like a sport, like an esport, right? They're gonna go in and these are the players that wanna go and just be like, fuck it, I'm gonna dominate. Cause that's me, right? I'm gonna go in and just like rip the hearts out of my competitors. And we want that for that version of the game. Because why? Because that's the content. Right? It's like pro sports. I don't watch, you know, the
middle,
I don't know, like, I don't watch like the Philippine Basketball League. You know, no disrespect to those people. I'm sure there's really good basketball players, but I watch the NBA, right? Because I want to watch the highest level of competition because LeBron's there. All these superstars are there. But in the NBA, there's only like 500 spots. There's not an infinite number of spots for the NBA. It's exclusive. It's only that amount of people, and you have to be that good to get in. Now, once you are that good, you can make a shit ton of money. Mm-hmm. Because you are that good. And why do you make money? It's because millions of people around the world want to watch you play, right? They're like, man, this guy's really good. I'm now captivated. I want to consume that content, right? So the fandom is, and the source of all that is the content is really compelling. So the Web3 version, what we're focused on is content. We want the best players, super competitive. Why? Because their AIs are going to be like jaw-dropping because we want people to watch it and go, what the hell? How?
But, right? but I mean, I was thinking they're going to make money by selling their AIs to people like me.
No, we don't make money on our NFTs in the sense of selling it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, if from a business model perspective, you got to, like, I think the core business model that we're trying to replicate here is the traditional sports business model, right? This is like saying for sports, you try to make the most money out of your best players like a LeBron. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way, right? You actually pay your best players. Where you make the money is you try to make money off of the fans that are looking up to LeBron, right? That's where you make the money. What's the core revenue stream for the NBA? TV rights, right? And what's TV rights? Is capturing attention. That's what sells. That's what sells because everyone's captivated by LeBron and Giannis and all of these guys. So that's what you're monetizing is the fans, right? And then you're passing on that monetization over to the pros. Now, the reason why it works is because there's literally 500 people making money.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
500 people and the franchises, the teams. Everyone else pays. And why do they pay? For the content.
Mm-hmm.
Entertainment factor.
That's how the business model works. So this is the same thing. Our pro players get paid to play. The way that they get paid is they have these playable characters that they can improve, right? So these characters can get better. It's not like most normal games where it's like, well, if you get a mythical character, it's just fundamentally better than the common character. Therefore, your mythical character is always worth more, right? That's luck. That's random, like that's RNG, right?
Gambling.
In our game, it's like everyone, you start with a canvas and it's up to you how much value you can create. This is 100% skill. This is why we say this is like real life, right? You go out there in real life. I'm not walking around with like a cursor on top of me that says I'm level 50 right now. And Yaba, you're at level 75. So therefore, you have more access to better skills than I do.
Yeah.
It's not how real life works. It's literally a continuous gradient of like progression.
Yeah. And it's based on how much effort you put into it. So the cool thing about this is if I'm improving it, I can improve on my own time whenever I want. But I can also make money because like I can be doing something else and this guy can fight for me and... You know, it's representation. Absolutely. It's represent me. I don't have to necessarily be there at that particular time. You can just fight it whenever. Yeah,
that's an incredible kind of insight because when you think about actually, because like this radically transforms game monetization in a couple of ways. Number one, because it's now AIs battling each other, it actually means that your fighters are 100% available 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. So what you have as a common issue in competitive gaming is what's called matchmaking liquidity. Mm-hmm. There's not enough people to compete.
Yeah.
Right. Even the biggest games out there.
There's not enough monster on the planet for those right? gamers to stay
you're
up.
You're talking about like League of Legends.
Yeah.
Right. Like the biggest competitive games out there still has issues with matchmaking liquidity.
Interesting. Yeah.
We don't. Yeah. Like we've
a new liquidity crisis, Yaba.
Just what I need.
We've had competitions where it had like 100 to 150 people. We have zero issues with matchmaking because the AIs are always available. So what that means is experience is better because you can always find a match. Number two is also because there's more opportunities for matches to be made, it also means that there's more opportunities for monetization in the game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? So now that increase in velocity of matchmaking is not linear, is exponential. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go from 1 to 10 linear. It literally goes from 1 to 1,000. It inflects upwards. So that's radically different, number one.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to think about it from a pro's perspective. And this is the exact point that you made. As a pro, what ends up happening with most pros is that they dedicate their lives to one game.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the switching cost is way too high.
Mm-hmm.
They can't take themselves away to another game because they've optimized their performance for one game and they need to stay on top to make the maximum profit for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Anything else is an opportunity cost, it's a distraction.
Mm.
Our game can actually almost naturally fit as an additional, almost like profit generation lever for them, because after a certain point, they don't have to be investing as much time in it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it
trained.
Basically earns, you know, for them, right? So this is actually really, like when we've had this conversations with some esports pros, like, their mind explodes. There's like, okay, wow, this makes sense. It's you know, basically like complete, you know, green, like blue sky for them in terms of another monetization channel that's not competing against their time. So they're actually more likely to explore something like this as an alternative.
Yeah, my AI can fight on a 72-hour marathon Twitch stream.
Yeah.
While you don't get tired. Hanging out in the Bahamas. And then
exactly.
Sipping Mai Tais or some shit.
Set that VPN card.
Yeah.
Actually, Wei, we brushed over something. So, you know, we're talking about creating the value for, you know, the characters and the NFT. Just to make one thing clear, you know, let's say one of these pro gamer builds up their AI. When they sell that AI NFT, are they selling the AI that they built up with it? You know what I mean?
Yes.
So like, can they, you know, unload the truck, start from scratch, build up another one, keep repeating the process?
They absolutely can. And when you sell an AI, the skill transfers with that AI. Mm-hmm. So if I'm really good and I sell it and you buy it from me, you are buying the AI that's already been trained up to that level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the key thing here is, and this is another aspect of the game that's really elegant, is just because you bought it at that level doesn't mean you're going to be dominating
it.
The game.
Or the same style, right?
Yeah,
same
for in style. Perpetuity, right? Because the competition is constantly elevating.
Mm-hmm.
If you stand still, your AI is going to be slowly grinding down the leaderboard because it's becoming more and more obsolete.
Yeah.
So this keeps everyone honest. This is a natural solution to the problem of a lot of these assets in NFTs where you have effectively, basically their property rights. And property rights, if you don't need to do anything to preserve its value or enhance its value, it just incentivizes people to squat on it and do nothing.
Yep.
At which point it destroys the economy. Mm-hmm. There's no incentive to innovate, to pursue, to build, to do anything. So games, traditional games, have to figure out very clever mechanisms to try to create that balance. In this game, there's a natural obsolescence factor because of the forces of competition that keeps people honest, right? And you can't just rest on your laurels and expect that you're going to constantly earn the same expected outcome as you had before. You'll be slowly regressing. So we love that. We love that about our game from that perspective.
Yeah, man, I love that too. I mean, and just looking at it from an investor standpoint, I mean, you can, I mean, you buy that asset from a, like a professional gamer. I mean, you can make money on it, you know, for the life of that asset, which, you know, you can probably accurately predict how long that's going to make you money before you have to transfer it over to somebody else that maybe at a lower cost that maybe will have the ability to retrain it. So I think that's cool, man. Model is set up correctly in this, and it's different from anything I've ever heard of. And I love the monetization part of it. I do want to go back to a previous point though that we just were talking about. And the reason I brought it up was because of the Rollbit. I didn't want to say that name, but anyways, there's a DGen, timestamp that out, but there's a DGen gambling website, and it was just so interesting to me because I was on there and I was actually thinking about participating in one of these games. Is like they had like NBA 2K audit the computers, like different teams, different years of teams facing each other off. And I was like, man, that's the D-Gen. That's the most D-Gen shit you can ever do, right? Like,
you know, the Vegas Vacation, National Lampoon.
Yeah, I mean,
Rock, Paper, Scissors.
I was there, man. I was like, there wasn't really a interesting game on. I was like, man, they got the 96 Bulls playing the, like, you know, 2000 Pistons or 76ers. I was like, AI versus Jordan.
Jordan's like, hot this week.
Yeah, that's an easy series, man. Yeah. Come on, man.
I mean, you would think, but man, the Sixers were holding their own, man.
They had odds, Way. It wasn't 1-1.
Exactly. The odds was crazy, right? So
I was like,
man, this is weird. But so, at first, I was like, who's playing this game? No, I need to know.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I heard Jordan's got the flu this week. Let me put money on.
Yeah, I'm talking to handicappers, you know, all of this stuff. Yeah. But, you know, come to find out, I did a little research and there's actually this thing. They have like computers actually like playing each other, like computer versus computer, and people are betting on it. I thought that was amazing. But, you know, this right here, what you're telling me is that won't happen. It's going to be basically the skill set of the people that are competing against each. So there's no computer element that's, you know, involved in between this, right?
Yeah. So that actual competition is a reflection of the human skill that went into the character that allowed it to perform at that level. Is purely a reflection of that. So when you watch this happen, you implicitly understand this, right? Like you're watching it. And this is where the magic of like, how did this person do this, right? This is where, like, if you're a casual fan, you just enjoy the competition. Mm-hmm. If you are a player and you had the experience of training your AI, you have respect for the fact that these AIs are really good. And then what happens is, like, you go through this process and you're like, okay, let me try to reverse engineer this. Because I know this is kind of what they did here. Let me see if I can replicate this outcome. So it actually incentivizes you to get back to train your AI. And a lot of players watch other good players' AI perform to get inspiration. So
it's like Twitch. I mean, you literally watch this guy play Fortnite. He's building this insane tower. I build like a 2-brick mansion and I'm like, oh yeah, sweet. Now I know how to do it, you know. So I definitely see that. And then especially with shooter games or anything skill based, really.
Yeah. But you know, it's not much different from the computer versus computer in the sense that Jordan got that good on his own and they based the game off of Jordan. Right. The only difference in AI this case is that it's you. AI. Yeah, it's AI you. Is AI, but it's yeah, you it's instead you. Of Jordan. Okay, yeah.
Exactly. It's you.
I am Jordan.
It's you.
Yeah.
But I just want to touch that on the degeneracy point, which is
he's speaking to Yaba directly here.
Which is so the core game, and we get this question a lot. It's like, okay, well, great concept. Like, how do you monetize? Right. So if you're not selling NFTs, what are you doing to monetize? Mm-hmm. So what I outlined before was, okay,
sports betting.
Think about sports. Sports monetize through attention, right? Mm-hmm. Content. All right. So that's one avenue is you can have the game monetization, which is like, you know, you can try to, you can set up this funnel where you get the casual players coming in and some of them are actually quite good. You try to convert them into competitive players. And then for those competitive players, what you're dangling is the prospect of becoming pro. Right. Mm-hmm. Because the probability of becoming pro is a very powerful pull for competitive players. Mm-hmm. We saw that with Dookie Dash.
Yep.
Right. Because you had this really shiny thing, this key, And people literally start paying for sewer passes just to play the game because they know the key was worth a lot of money, right? So that's the template for that side. Now, what about everyone else who's not a competitive player, who may be interested, who is a casual player? How do you monetize that group of people? Mm-hmm. This is where you monetize that fandom, right? The reason why you're interested in these computers playing ball is because the nostalgia of Jordan in the 96 Bulls and AI in the 2076ers, right? If I just said it was some random team against a random team and it's like CPU generated names, you don't want to watch that. There's no interest in that, yeah. Right? So it's fandom. And with fandom, what we can create is we can take these in-game characters who are competing in the NFT game, and we can basically create derivative assets that are basically like, they're almost like, you know, like fantasy sports, like daily pick 'em. Mm-hmm. We just make them into like a trading card. Mm-hmm. And these trading cards auto updates in terms of performance based on how the actual NFT is performing in the game. So now the casual player, they can participate from a fantasy experience, right? And that now you're directly kind of monetizing that fandom. Right. So, and the great thing about us is, hey, there's no downtime. Like, it's just constant. It's like 24/7 is always going. Right.
We can make a game right now. I can, you know, I can choose the top two players to play their AIs now because that's always open.
Yeah.
Prior, and Wade, the real question, you know, me and Yabba, we're degens. Can we wager on this? Can we put up some? First of all, one token, and can we put up the token on these matches?
Yeah, AI am I? I ain't doing AI. We'll bet on some AI.
Put up your coins, y'all. Put up your coins.
I think once this game is up and running, one way or another, there's probably going to be ways to wager on it.
In our Discord, we'll make a channel in our Discord.
Yeah, backroom deals, man. We'll make backroom.
I don't think there's. You know, it's one thing for us to build all that. It's an entire other thing for other people to come up with the structures to support that. So
we got you. We got you. Yeah. We'll do the dirty work back here.
Yeah. Speakeasy. In our end, speakeasy. We got it.
There you go.
So how do we play this game? How do we, you got us all enticed.
Yep. So we're about to launch what's called the demo. And if you kind of join our community, you'll figure out how to basically get access to the demo. We're still running it in batches so that we're not like, it's not completely just open to the public. Yep. But I think the demo would be like ready to roll out in a couple of weeks. And basically you can come in with the demo, you can experience the whole game loop. So you will experience what it's like to train an AI. Now it's not a competitive version. So what you won't be able to do is tap into the competition of all the other AIs that other people have trained. But you can evaluate your AI and compete against some pre-programmed CPUs and see how good it is. So what we do with the demo is we're actually using it as like, we allow people to try it. People start experiencing AI Arena. And then through that, they can, you know, the more you play, you actually get prizes and rewards from us that you can ultimately convert to airdrops. So there's an incentive to like play and get involved in the community and you can get rewarded for it. The other thing it allows us to do is like, it's a great skill filter for us because we're searching for good players to bring into the pro leagues. So if you are consistently good and we have all the data behind the scenes, if you're able to beat various different types of CPUs, all of those things, we can see that. And what we're going to do is like, we'll basically recruit those players and drop them into what's called exclusive access. And in exclusive access, that's like the pool of players that'll become pro. And what we allow them to do is they have access to the competitive version of the game. So not only are they testing our game, making it really robust, we're giving them the opportunity to play against the best players in the game right now, learn from each other, get better, and really start pushing out really, really fun and compelling content in terms of like dramatically like well-trained AIs. So that's kind of the funnel initially. We're going to lead off with a demo where it's like broad access. And then as you're playing the demo, we're going to distill people into the exclusive access. Once we get to a certain size of like a pool of people, quote unquote competitive players, we'll launch the NFT version of the game. Because then that's at the point where like the content and the game is ready to go. We have this
backbone. Entertainment factors there. It, people exactly. are good. Yeah.
Exactly.
I like that. I got an idea for you. What's the, you know, I create this AI. It's crushing it. You know, you're saying that you're going to have the NFT that you're going to be able to sell for somebody else. Is there a way to, I think it's a good idea with, so I interviewed Parallel and they're doing this similar action where you have the NFT card per se, but they create what they refer to as echoes of them where the, you know, they, that person able is able to play with, you know, not the actual NFT card, but the, you know, like an echo of it or, mm-hmm. you know, play with them for like a rented fee essentially.
Yep.
Yep. Is that anything you guys have on books for or sure. plans?
Yeah, that's definitely in the pipeline and the roadmap of things that we will either build ourselves or we'll partner with a third party kind of protocol or a project to help build that capability for our game as well. So this rental type of construct where you can basically borrow or play on behalf of someone else is all viable. So we do want to encourage people who are coming to the table who are more entrepreneurial,
yeah.
who have an owner's mindset to own the NFT assets. Because sometimes like the best players don't necessarily have like the business
idea
vision acumen. Of like yeah. how to maximize the value of an asset. So what we want is the ability for the business acumen to pair with a really good player through this rental, some kind of like sharing arrangement. Or
there's almost like a manager and then there's the person you're training, you know, like just how you would in sports essentially.
Exactly. So all of that is on the pipeline. We think that's a very important like enabler to bring sure. more types of people into the ecosystem. And quite frankly, if you think about it, like our NFTs, like we're going to launch our NFTs with about 500 to 750 is very constrained supply. And the reason why is the Pro League, like just the same reasons as like NBA, NFL they rarely ever do expansion. Is because you need to control for the quality of people who are coming to that league, right? And it should be getting better and better over time. Same idea here. The rate of inflation over time is going to be very modest, but it's held in proportion to the amount of players that you're aggregating in the ecosystem. So if we get to 100,000 players, a million players, yeah, you can offer a few more NFTs. It's not going to hurt the value of the NFTs because it's proportional. But the starting point for us is about like 500 to 750. And once we get there, and as this game scales, and if we build a really large audience into the hundreds of thousands and millions, these NFTs are going to be like franchise rights, right? Because they lay claim to ecosystem value, right? So the way to think about it is like, I'll go back to an NBA example. In an NBA, there is collective bargaining and there's revenue sharing, right? So basically the league goes out, negotiates large TV deals, and those deals, they basically pipe back into the franchises. The franchises all get shared revenue. And then the owners determine through collective bargaining with the Players Association, how much of that revenue goes to the players. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it goes to the franchises, right? But the overall bucket of revenue is basically like most of it is coming from league negotiations with broadcasters. Mm-hmm. That whole pie, if you think about it in our context, that's decentralized to the ecosystem. The key value accrual mechanisms for the ecosystem is our NFTs. So these NFTs does become basically like franchise rights. Mm-hmm. So depending on how, you know, how successful this thing can get, I mean, these NFTs, I'm like, we're scratching the surface of how crazy NFT value can get.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Because if you were to ask me, I think prior to like 2008, I remember when I was a young kid, you guys can tell I'm an NBA fan. I look at these franchise values, and at that time, like, you know, these small market teams were selling for like $250 million.
Yep, I remember that.
Right?
Yeah. And then the Clippers now, what are they worth?
The lowest franchise is like a billion and a half or something like that, right?
That was so, when Clippers got purchased, right? That's when they took it up to a billion. Yeah.
And why is that? Scarcity value, mm-hmm. right? And as the revenues continue to grow, there's only 30 franchises to go around. If you have one of those franchises, it inflects upwards.
Yeah.
So, and just to piggyback off this, even someone like me who's going to buy one, or if I buy one and I know I'm not going to be a good trainer, right? I know that there's somebody out there that can train them and who's going to buy it, reset the brain, inject their value into it, and then sell it to somebody. So there's always like a min bid or floor behind it. You know, even from my perspective.
Or you can find someone to train it for you. Or you can rent, you know, like.
That's what he just said, Cryer.
That's awful.
He just said that.
He said sell.
Oh, no. I meant if I sell it, that's a good point. If I could hire somebody else to train for it, even
yeah,
better. Both viable. Yeah. No, both viable.
Well, I knew what he was talking about. He knew what he was going to say. I know he could have said that. I mean, it sounded the damn same, man. I'm going to tell you the truth.
We're saying the same things.
Yeah, man. I was just going to say, I add to it. It's like, so the people that are eligible for this NFT are only going to be like the professional players starting off. There's no way other than they do really well in the exclusive access round and get picked, and then they're able to like, all right, I'll just sell this off. That's the only way to be able to get to be eligible for this NFT, to be able to purchase it and participate in this ecosystem from a financial perspective.
Not exactly. So you're right. Mm-hmm. The way to earn these NFTs on a primary basis before they come to a secondary market is to compete for it through things, something like exclusive access. Once you have it, it's already trading on OpenSea. So if you are interested in it as like an owner or like a holder, you can go on OpenSea and buy one that's currently listed on a secondary basis. Mm-hmm. And that's how other people can get involved, right? Is to go and kind of basically purchase it off of the secondary market. Now, the reason why we do this is because we do want to make sure that people who initially hold these assets really did earn it. They had to compete for it. And this way we can prevent things like civil attacks and botting and, you know, too many people just there being there whitelist.
So no grinding for the whitelist, man. You just actually got to earn it, right? You know, like.
You got to grind in the arena, bro.
That's messing up my mint bot, man. I bought my mint bot for this thing right here, and you just just put a nail to that one. All right, but yeah, man. I really like this. I like this whole setup, like this ecosystem, idea. How it's incentivized. I like the way you're taking it to you're flipping it on us. You know, it's like the value is not coming from the people that are trading and flipping NFTs, hoping for
the random rarity.
Yeah, for the random rarity, or hoping that the project, you know,
got the 101 guys,
whatever roadmap. The more and more I think about this, it's like it's wow. But I mean, but I like this part because you're actually trying to build an audience, you're trying to actually build value right up front, and that's from. You know, monetizing fandom. So I think that's cool. And you're finding a way to drive that right back to the NFT holders, that value back to the NFT holders. I love that whole analogy about the NBA, it being the NBA franchise. Cause I mean, that really, you know, makes it pretty clear how this thing is going to be set up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, again, I do a different podcast called Nerd FD Radio. We just interview games and stuff like that.
This is like the first don't be shilling your podcast on NRP, man.
I feel like
we do games too. We do games too.
Get out of here, Yabba. I feel like this is like actually one of the first games that I'm actually like, oh shit, this is actually something that's not just a fucking buzzword and. Well, we got an NFT and it's going to do this. We're going to be so cool.
Claim your land, right?
Claim your land. Fucking get out of here with the land. But yeah, it's such a great idea. AI, the combination of AI, AR, like augmented reality and blockchain is going to be massive. Like, is there any idea or thought process on augmented reality type gameplay in the future or anything like that?
It's crossed our minds, but it's a little bit later in the horizon, but we can totally see, you know, for example, like
for the sports fandom
fight. Yeah. When you watch a fight, like, you can be like augmented reality, like projecting out of your phones when you're initiating a fight with another AI. Like that's all technically feasible. We have to spend some time thinking through how to implement it, but that would be pretty dope, to be honest.
Well, yeah, no, yeah, and then we'll make the objects in the room, the platforms. I'm sure that's super easy to code. So yeah, you guys,
yeah, come on, get on it, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Fire us a couple of the chat.
No, man, this has been awesome. I just kind of like one last point. I mean, it's, you know, you guys obviously are capitalizing on this AI craze, but not in a, you know, like a cheesy way.
Buzzwordy.
Yeah, this is pretty groundbreaking, but I love how it's in the ethos of AI in the sense that people are lazy nowadays. I just want to type in a prompt and I just want to watch it do the work for me, right? And in the same sense, just like Twitch, I like sitting back and watch someone that's good at the video game play it. And then in this same sense, you know, I don't even want to fight my character. I just want to watch him go to work, make me money, maybe fight while I'm sleeping. So yeah, man, it's awesome.
You go build a character that's gonna go like
the inherent laziness
of you know, like go home.
Yeah, how deep can this character go?
Yeah. Like, why not?
How smart is he? When will these characters go sentient? Yeah. You know, when are they gonna
come home and complain about how rough it is?
Actually, you know what? Final question before we get out of here. You guys did touch on, you know, you don't want, or Cryer mentioned this, you know, rarity with pulling NFTs and stuff. Will these characters be all identical? Will they have, you know, I know they won't have advantages, but will they look all the same?
No, they'll have cosmetic differences. There is one class of NFTs that look really different that is more rare, but they have the same, they have the same fighting potential. So there's no difference in like how good they can become. But the reason and they're called Dendroids. The reason why we have them is like we see them as marquee assets that these kind of organized teams will have to be their like marquee asset like that they use to market. And so these characters come with a TV screen that you can project any other PFP onto it. So you can use an ape to represent your team. You can use whatever other kind of like collection that you want. It's more from a marketing perspective. In the same vein, like Formula One cars have all these stickers on them.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it's like, just a Fortnite skin. I mean, I don't care if it doesn't do anything. I have to look cool. I have to look good. You play good. You
feel
good.
Take that, Cryer, messing with my royalty. I mean, messing with my rarity trait.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was all like, oh yeah, let's do this shit. No, but we recently partnered with Bicycle because for days.
So
we have a good looking.
And that's it for the podcast. Way and Mike, this has been awesome, man. Yeah, I think we're going to have to get you guys back on because I feel like we just touched the top of the surface with this thing.
Toss you over to Nerd.
Yeah, actually, come back here. We also have Nerd FT Radio, plus we do spaces and stuff. But yeah, man, I'm excited to keep an eye on this one.
For sure. It's been loads of fun. Thanks for having us. Yeah, would love to come back and talk more. We have a lot coming down the pipe. There's a big announcement coming out tomorrow, but I don't know when this is going to air. So maybe by the time it airs, it will be announced. But
we'll be dropping
there's a whole bunch of cool stuff coming up because we're going to be more active.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Cool, man.
Who's active right now, guys?
Yeah, I love it. The Twitter profiles
nerd.
It's at @AIArena_. Don't forget the underscore.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, Way, Mike, this has been a lot of fun. We appreciate you guys. Everyone go check out the Twitter page. Go follow these guys on Twitter. Keep a lookout for AI Arena. It's coming soon. But yeah, we do have to get out of here. So for me, Fudd, Cryer, Way, and Mike, we will catch you guys later. See you.
And Yaba.
Appreciate you guys. It's a pleasure.
Oh, yeah. Dude, yeah, you forgot me, Nate.
Yeah, that was not
the
pleasure
Yaba.
Part.
We got to go.
We said Yaba.
Shit on my hair. All right, peace out.